fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, baby! They can't block Calais Campbell.
Cuts right to the five, Brown to the end zone. He's in! Touchdown!
You've got to be kidding me, Carson Palmer.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
If you guys could look at your watch, maybe your cell phone, whatever apparatus you use these days, I don't want to know what time it is. I don't want to know the day or the month, but I am curious what year it says on your phone. Oh, 2016. Can we just get that straight? This is most definitely 2016. Translation, this is not 2015. No longer. It is now a 1-3 start, and it is extremely real, and we need some answers on Cardinals Underground. Paul Calvisi, Kyle Odegaard, Darren Urban, what says you?
Oh, gosh. I would say yes, no, it's 2016. Yeah. I would say it's 2016. You're absolutely right, Paul. Now, answers on the football field, if I knew that, again, right. I would be a rich man.
Yes, yes.
If I knew that.
You would be a consultant, and you'd have an office here somewhere and a big salary.
I wouldn't be hanging around with
exactly.
You guys.
Exactly. You wouldn't be here on azcardinals.com for Cardinals Underground, for Pete's sake. My goodness, you'd have all the answers. Do you think this start is more about the opponents or more about the Arizona Cardinals? There's another heavy-hitting question for you, Kyle, to sink your teeth into.
100% Cardinals. The opponents haven't been great. It's not like you've gone against a team that, like the Carolina team, for instance, last year that was playing perfect and they dominated at home. This has been four games that you could have won every single game if you executed, and they didn't. So I think it's all about the Cardinals not doing what they needed to do.
So is that going to be some sort of diagnosis for the season? Or does it give you somewhat? Does it give you some hope? Does it make you bullish they can change it because they've been there and they've done that and they're a proven team? But four games into the season is a pretty good sample size. And as Tony Jefferson said, you can't come out and make 80 of 83 plays. It's those three plays you don't make on defense that are killing you.
I will say that, going back to what you just asked, Kyle, I mean, I do think a lot of it falls on the Cardinals, but most teams can do that. I mean, unless you're the 2003 Arizona Cardinals that were losing games by like 25 and 30 points a week, most games are going to be close. And the teams that don't succeed in winning those games, that is who they are. And so while I agree that there are things that they can fix, and we keep hearing every week about the correctable problems, and they are correctable problems, at some point when it becomes a pattern that the correctable problems aren't getting corrected, or there's three plays out of 80 that aren't getting done and it's costing you games, that becomes more than just a weekly skid off the road. It becomes what you are.
But I kind of disagree where you guys
are. You're not allowed to disagree. What the hell?
What you guys are saying, is four games enough? You know, like, is this indicative of what we're going to see all season? I don't think so. I think, obviously, that would extrapolate out to a 4-12 season, which I don't think anybody believes is going to happen. So no. I think there have been issues, but I don't think that's going to be the story of the season. I'm 100% certain they're going to turn it around and be better than this.
I guess I'm not meaning straight math, because I'll roll no math around here. I guess I mean the identity of this team, because a year ago in particular, you know, they won the close games. Good teams don't play close games. Good teams win close games in the NFL. Everybody now.
Can I disagree again?
Look at the San Diego Chargers. Have the San Diego Chargers not lost three leads out of four games with about 2 minutes to go or less?
I think
that's their identity right now.
I think close games are a lot more coin flips than we might think. I think good teams win more close games because they're better, but I think it's pretty close. I don't think this team, I mean, I think when you've lost two of these, I think more likely than not, you would have won one and lost one, and it just happened where they lost
one. Moneyball Odegaard over here.
I guess you look at the Rams game, okay? You look at the loss here most recently, 17-13 against the Rams. You held the Rams to 41 yards rushing. That checked the top box on your game plan. And then you ran for a buck 18. And if you're going to be that team where it's always something, but it's a moving target, that's usually a hallmark of a losing team. Well, just like a winning team in any sport has a different hero at different times, yeah, and different ways they win. You can flip that, and that usually makes for a losing team.
See, I will say this. It's a concern of mine. And then you start going and putting labels on it like a losing team, and then that's when I start drifting over to the Odegaard side of things here. Because here's the thing. I really we you break it down, and it often in the NFL and comes down to one or two plays. But I still feel like when I look at that game, if David Johnson, who pretty much had two hands on the ball, I mean, he wasn't old school Tiki Barber holding the ball out there. He was in the middle of the pile. He had the one arm came off a little bit, but he's getting hammered by about 1,000 guys that are weigh 300 pounds. And when they knocked it loose, I still feel if he doesn't fumble that ball, they don't lose that game. Because I think they move down and they're able to kick a field goal in that circumstance. They might end up having to punt at some point, but I think it's, you know, I just feel like that alone was a turning point. And that's just such a small thing for me to think, okay, this is absolutely what their identity is. Now, I will say this. I agree with you to the point where it does seem like when you're winning every week, there's a different hero. And when things are not going well, it does feel like, oh, this week it was this. It was the punt return, or it was the bad snap, or it was the, which we've obviously seen already.
I mean, let's just get the negative stuff out of the way off the top. If you're looking for constants, then things that are not changing, you're not scoring in the first quarter. That has been a constant. You're the only team in the NFL without a point in the first quarter. And then you just alluded to it, special teams gaffes. It's been a different mistake on special teams that has been very costly virtually every game, at least in all three losses.
Yeah, and that's the big thing is you look at it offensively and defensively, and I see a lot of hope on both sides of the ball there. But like you said, when you've had something go wrong on special teams in every single game, and it's not just one thing that you can get corrected. It seems like it's been across the board, a lot of different things, from a snap to coverage to kickoff returns, missed field goals, missed extra points. It's a lot of different things. So if you aren't at least competent in special teams, even if you have a small advantage in the other two, then you could lose.
And I'll say this too, on another thing that hasn't gone well for them of late, but then you start looking deeper, and this is me, and I understand, you know, that not everybody is necessarily going to agree on this point, but like, I even look at the turnovers. I mean, they've thrown 7 interceptions the last two games. And to me, in my way I'm looking at it, only one of them, they all hurt. Don't get me wrong, they all hurt. But only one of them didn't come when they were pressing at the end trying to come back.
I'll agree with that.
Mm-hmm. You know, that was the deep throw against the Rams that got picked off that was probably over. But, I mean, all four of the fourth quarter Buffalo interceptions were trying to do too much when you're trying to come from way behind. Both Stanton's picks were, I mean, the Hail Mary almost doesn't count.
Yeah.
You know, that play never even had a chance. I was a little disappointed because, and I don't know if it was because he was already worried about the pressure he might have get, but Drew Stanton threw that ball with all three of his receivers at like the 15-yard line. I mean, they never even had a chance to get down the field. But the previous interception, bad play by Drew Stanton. They had time. He forced that throw that never had a chance to Michael Floyd. But still, he was pressing at that point. You know,
and a really tough situation coming into the game cold.
I mean,
losing.
It doesn't excuse them, but it's
there
not
was
like
a DB blitz on the Hail Mary where a guy looped around and was right in his face.
But I mean, I guess I look at those picks and I'm like, it's not like they're coming in the first quarter and you're self-destructing.
True. That's where the analytics are corrupt. If you're just going on the picks because the eyeball test tells you something different, the end of the Bills game, the end of the loss to the Rams. You know, the special teams, to me, when Jeff Fisher after the game says, we were pretty confident we were going to get a punt return, and we did eventually. Yeah, now that's Jeff Fisher, and there's been a lot of talk in this series.
If Justin Bethel isn't down, the whole play has changed. And there's no way he could have predicted that.
You know what's a bigger problem to me is just kickoff returns. I mean,
yes.
I'll test you guys right here, right now. This is an honest question. Have the Cardinals returned a kickoff beyond the 25-yard line this year?
I'm fairly certain no.
I don't think so. I think they got to the 24 last game, and that was a small victory. So
look, for all that being said, you still had 26 first downs, and they had 12, and you outgained them in total yards. And, you know, the opportunities were there. You know, they're not going to stop taking shots down the field. Let's not get into that whole thing. Every single play has underneath options. You know, they're not going to change the identity of the offense or the DNA of it or the play calling. You know, what does need to change? Do you guys have a sense? I mean, in talking to guys in the locker room, how would you diagnose it? What is the prescription?
Not necessarily talking to guys in the locker room, but when I look at it, and this is vague in terms of what I'm saying. I mean, this is not something I could walk necessarily into a room and say, if you do this, it's all better. But I just feel like they need to button up. I mean, it feels like, you know, you just so little things. I mean, if Marcus Cooper knocks that ball down, he goes for the ball and doesn't get it, and Tony Jefferson is overruns the play just a little bit, and a 10-yard pass turns into a 65-yard pass. Without that, the Rams don't win yesterday. That alone, everything else could go bad. That alone. And I think that's what's killing right now is, and this goes back to Tony Jefferson talking about the 80 and 83, which is the margin for error is so little for them right now because they're not scoring the points that they did last year, that they can't afford those kinds of mistakes. I mean, last year they might have made a mistake or two like that, but who cares, because they were going to score 35 points. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously not happening, and I'm not sure if it's going to happen. I mean, even you talk about the shots down the field, even Bruce Arians was saying, you know, it's not the deep shots aren't a problem. They're there. We need to throw the ball further. Now, we can talk all about where Carson Palmer's arm is and whether there's an issue of him getting the ball farther, because it seems like we keep talking about him under throwing deep throws. That's, if you keep talking about it, maybe something's up there. I don't know. But they're not going to score those 35 points. So to me, getting buttoned up, especially defensively, and just maybe playing a little bit more sound, maybe that's it.
And I think also, like you said, on offense, Palmer, he's got to be more accurate and make better decisions at times. And also, I think they were going against the Rams defensive front, so it's with a caveat, but I think the pass protection wasn't very good in that game. And once it starts happening early, then that I think will affect a quarterback, when you're always kind of a little jittery thinking guys are coming because it's legitimate. And I think Aaron Donald's a freak, and he got a bunch of pressure, really, and that's going to happen because he's one of the best players in the NFL. But the fact that they were coming at it from a lot of different angles, and Palmer couldn't really set his feet, and he's one of the most immobile quarterbacks in the league, so he can't run around. He can't get outside the pocket, really. So you have to have good protection, and if it's not there, it's going to mess a lot of things up offensively.
You know, on a Monday alone, we didn't have a chance to talk to a lot of guys. Locker room wasn't exactly full, but you had Frosty Rucker saying, look, we're just not making the plays we usually make. You know, Tyrann Mathieu, it's coming down to plays that we made in the past we're not making right now. All right.
But
why?
But see, again, I will go back to, they're right, but I'll go back to...
I'm not disputing. I'm asking why.
I know, but I'm going back to the very top, which is... What year was this again, Paul?
2016.
I mean,
right.
They keep saying we're going to move on, and yet they're, now granted, okay,
which gets back to my premise, is this the team's identity, and we got to learn to accept it.
I think defensively, a lot of the reasons they're not making plays is because they're not taking these 14-point leads where the other teams have to throw, and then you let Patrick and Tyrann and the secondary guys do their things. The Rams are able to be conservative and run the ball. Even though they weren't running the ball well, they kept on running it and doing these things where they didn't take a lot of chances. So when you don't have to do that, the defense isn't going to make as many plays.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the offense.
Playing from ahead was a big thing.
I like that. That's good. You're right. No first quarter points in four games equals no lead.
Mm-hmm.
You can't play from the lead and then go ahead and pin your ears back. You're absolutely right, and maybe that's why the defense
looks different. If they're close, they'll be conservative. Yeah, I think the defense probably has more playmakers now with the way Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden are getting after the quarterback. I think if you can get a lead, and we saw it in the Tampa Bay game, once they did it, it all became, I mean, it started cascading down.
Exactly, and it's the same thing where you're always talking about it, about momentum, and I mean, that kind of thing. If you score early, then the defense gets to kind of pin their ears back, and then good things happen, and then everybody's riding around with this confidence that, again, going back to last year, that's what they had last year. Everybody was extremely confident when they walked out on the field every time, because they knew the offense was going to score. They knew the offense was going to score early. They knew the other team knew it too. I mean, that was the other thing. The other team knew that not only were they going to have to battle a defense that had some playmakers, but they knew that to beat the Arizona Cardinals, you were probably going to need to score 28 points at least.
Mm-hmm.
And that's overwhelming when you go into a game knowing you need four touchdowns. And that's, I mean, the other than the Buccaneers game, they've only broke 20 once.
All right, I'm going to go back to 2014 then, because Drew Stanton beat the Niners back in 2014. He went 5-3 as a starter back then. And if I heard BA right on Monday, it's going to be what we're calling a plain time decision.
Oh,
is that what we're understanding here? What do you think?
There, Paul.
Plain time decision, right? By the time they get on the plane Wednesday and go to the Bay Area, they're going to know whether it's going to be Carson or Drew Stanton. Is that accurate?
That's why you get paid the big bucks for plain time decision. That's great.
For cheesy little three-word monikers like that. Yeah,
that's what Bruce Arians said. I mean, I'll be curious to know if indeed there is a decision made at plain time, whether the rest of us are going to know that or if it's going to be a situation where we go into
point.
The game.
Right.
So, I mean, we may not know. Unless they just come right out and say, well, Carson's not doing well enough that he's just going to stay home and not take a plane ride. And I will say that if he's not going to play, I don't know with a concussion if you want him going up in the air 30,000 feet.
You know, it's not like the arm injury or whatever it was week two of 2014 at New York where, you know, he had to go ahead and, you know, try it in pregame.
Right.
And then when it didn't work, all right, Drew, you're up and you got 2 hours till kickoff. You know, it's not going to be, I think you're right. You probably will know by the time you depart, because do you want a guy dealing with concussion symptoms to get on a team plane and fly a couple hours? If it is Drew Stanton, give us your thoughts, Kyle. What do you think that means for this offense?
Yeah, I think, you know, we just referenced that Giants game, and I think it could be pretty similar in a lot of those games a couple years ago where, you know, you're not going to be this high-flying offense. The defense knows it has to play pretty well, and the offense really has to take advantage of opportunities. And in that Giants game, you got the big Ted Ginn punt return that kind of helped swing the tide. So if you could do something either defensively or a big return or a big run that David Johnson does, something like that I think will help. It's nice playing the Niners because you know their offense isn't great and you don't have to take too many chances on offense yourself, where Drew can just do the shorter passes and not have to try to, you know, dissect a secondary as much. But I'm assuming it's not going to be very pretty. I think both teams are kind of beat up and both are 1-3 and not feeling too good right now, and they both really want to win. So I think it'll be kind of a little backyard brawl.
I wonder if to some degree the rest of the team benefits because they say, you know what, we really got to bring it now because we have a backup quarterback. There's no relying on Carson Palmer and his 35 touchdown passes from a year ago. And all. Look, we've got a backup there. Yeah, he's capable. Yes, he's proven from 2014, but we all better bring it. Sort of like a New England effect. Without Tom Brady, you know, the rest of us have to be better.
I could see that. And I could also see a defense that is frustrated with a couple of things. I mean, defensively, you know, they obviously had a couple slips, but I thought they played pretty well against the Rams when they were sound. But again, as bad as that punt return was, you're thinking to yourself, okay, just keep him out of the end zone. It's 13-13, and we'll see what Drew Stanton can do. And instead, they gave up a 3rd-and-8 pass, and they got in the end zone. And I think defensively, they're stinging. The Cardinals are stinging a little bit. And now you go against Blaine Gabbert, who obviously has done a little bit better in the Chip Kelly system than maybe you expect, but he's Blaine Gabbert. And, you know, you've got to feel like you can play pretty well against him, and we'll see what happens. I mean, he wasn't awful against them last year in not Chip Kelly's offense, and the 49ers almost beat him last year.
Yeah. We could say the same thing about this last game. That was Case Keenum at quarterback.
Yeah. Maybe we should stop talking about all these lousy quarterbacks they're going
to
beat.
Which I think brings us to Tyrann Mathieu, because, you know, once again, he has been pretty forthright in his assessment of the Cardinals' defense and the secondary in particular, and he's admitted, to Darren's point, they're not totally buttoned up right now. And the run defense was there. The pressure was there quite often, even though they missed some tackles in the backfield. But you had the sacks once again from Chandler Jones or Marcus Golden. However, the miscommunication seemed to be there and some critical third down, especially to the tight end, where all of a sudden DBs are looking at each other like, we didn't get that check right.
Yeah, you know, you do 83 snaps defensively or however many they had, and there will be points where you're not exactly communicating perfectly, and sometimes that happens and you just hope to limit the damage. I don't think even last year, as much as we talked about Rashad Johnson and everybody figuring everything out, the Chicago game comes to mind when they got an easy touchdown because of a miscommunication. So I think these things are going to happen. But to me, figuring that stuff out pre-snap, knowing what's going on, and then going back to the touchdown where just not trying too hard. Like if you give up a 15 or a 20-yard pass, that thing happens. But don't make it where you try to force a fumble and then let the guy go and get 30 or 40 more yards. Just realize when you can take chances and when you can't.
It's not like the Niners have a lot of weapons that scare you.
No.
I mean, they just don't. I mean, a receiver, you know, not many guys on that roster make the Cardinals roster at receiver.
But we just said the same thing about the Rams. Yeah.
No, you're right. You're right.
Carlos Hyde and who else? Yeah. Todd Gurley and who else?
And they have the advantage of playing Chip Kelly the last 3 years. So they even have familiarity with the system.
I think that part does help. Yeah. Although, again, when you're talking about, you know, tempo and all that stuff coming off a short week, and all of a sudden you gotta, you're going against an offense that's going to try and run a billion plays as best they can. You know,
yeah, I don't expect the Niners offense to come out and do anything great. It's just a matter of, if you do have Stanton, can you do anything against a San Francisco defense that has done pretty well in certain games? So
without Bowman?
Yeah, Navarro Bowman is out.
I don't know if he was the same player as he used to be, but
hater.
And without DeForest Buckner, too, who was a good player. But they have a pretty good defensive line.
You know the question I'd love to get an answer to? If you guys ever run to Matt Barkley somewhere around town, you got to ask him one question. Okay, here we go.
Chicago?
No, because now I'm getting back to the Eagles game a year ago. Okay. I'm having like a Ron Wolfley flashback out of nowhere. Here we go. Is during that game, he had an earpiece in, and he was communicating with the Cardinals defense on every single snap. And you can't tell me. Based on some cryptic comments by some of the Cardinals DBs, we need to go find these guys and ask them. Maybe they'll give it up here in 2016. I'm telling you, I think Barkley called out about two-thirds of Chip Kelly's plays from the sideline. Well, and that was a competitive advantage the Cardinals will not have in San Francisco.
That's true.
Yeah, but also, even Tyron Matthew has said, you know, it's a simpler offense that when they've seen the Eagles and whenever, you know, wherever Chip was, they thought they figured out what was going on, because people say it's kind of simplified, where the Chip Kelly's offense doesn't run a bunch of things and it's not super exotic. They've been good at what they're doing, but you can figure it out, but you got to stop it. So I think they have a beat on probably what they want to do, but you have to be able to execute what you want
to. It's not like the Bears are playing Thursday night. They could just fly him in.
That's true. They need a quarterback. Is he on the practice squad? Could you elevate him? Could you sign him?
Actually, I think he got elevated when Culler got hurt.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Give me a thought on the new 9-0, Robert Kimdichie. What are fans supposed to take away at this point? We know he was hampered and his progress was slowed by the high ankle sprain and all that, but he supposedly had a great week of practice in week three and yet still didn't dress.
Certainly not a great sign that he's inactive, and whether it's the ankle or whether they don't feel like he's ready to play, we expected him at this point to make some sort of impact because he's such a physically imposing player, and you figure just even if it's just in pass rush situations, a third and long or something, throw him in there. But the other guys have played well. I think the defensive line was a big strength in this last game, and maybe they're just playing better than him, or it's the injury.
I'm just going to take from it that at least Bruce Arians has not called him knee-deep the sequel. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that's a plus.
That is a positive.
I guess that's a plus.
There's no nickname attached.
I do think the ankle set him back a little bit, but I mean, I think if
Frosty Rucker all these weeks,
if he was everything that you were hoping for right out of the box, I don't think he'd be sitting. I certainly don't think he would have been sitting last week. That's just my guess, and we'll kind of have to see where it goes from here, because you'd rather not see another first-round pick end up sitting on the sideline the whole year.
And now with Josh Morrow, you know, on the injury list, I mean, you know, you would think this would be an opportune time for him to step up. There's actually quite a few guys on the injury list, right?
Banged up.
Stinson's there as well. You know, Tyvon Branch, which means that Tyron Matthew might end up back near the line of scrimmage.
He says he wants to.
He says.
He was all for it. I was just asking him if Branch doesn't play, would you be okay going back there? And he was like, I want to go back there either way. I'm ready to get back in it. I don't want to play this deep center field last line of defense thing anymore. I want to make some plays.
Jimmy Chitwood.
So that's a very encouraging sign that he's ready to go, because they badly need a difference maker like that defensively.
Well, that's what BA wanted. He wanted to hear his players say, Coach, I can make it.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted. He wanted that.
It's time for me to start playing ball again.
There you go. All right. Well, we'll see what happens Thursday night in San Francisco. It'll be the Cardinals, and it'll be the first of two straight in primetime. And it is your chance.
Three straight.
There is a three straight?
Yeah, we got.
I'm just taking a 1 week at
Thursday,
a time.
Thursday, and you got Monday, and then they got Sunday Night Football against the Seahawks.
Oh, okay. Well, just taking it one game at a time, there's a huge difference between 1-4 and 2-3.
Yes, there is.
That should be ample motivation right there.
Yes.
And that is Cardinals Underground and azcardinals.com.